see what happens here. Ooh, that is not good.
Oh my god.
Good lord, I can't roll for shit.
Woo, 3.
I think that's good.
But remember, we're really good at making games harder than they need to be.
Hello, and welcome to House Rules, the podcast that explores all things rules related with your favorite tabletop games. Questions, clarifications, best, worst, and some that just need a tweak. So join us as we explore the House Rules.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of House Rules, a proud member of the Talk Nerdy to Me podcast network. I'm Commander Scott. Joining me today, I have Houston, Jeremiah, and, as always, the wonderful gaming gals of the Jamies. Everyone, how are we doing?
Fantabulous.
Doing very well.
Yep, doing well.
Party on, Garth.
Party on, Wayne. Party on. Okay, see, that's going to shoot me off into a little tangent here real quick. I'm sorry.
You can't do off that. Topic.
I can't. I'm sorry. I just watched Bill and Ted Face the Music here a couple of nights ago. And I don't know if any of you all have seen it.
Not yet.
So it's worth a watch. So first of all, it is Bill and Ted, so don't expect anything more than Bill and Ted. The biggest compliment I think I can make for the movie, there's some editing things that they could have done a little different, but you know, when you first start the movie, pretty much all you see is Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter attempting to act like these characters again, and it's kind of sad, right? But then as you get into the story, by the end of it, you see Bill and Ted again. That's who I see. I see the characters. I lose the actors and I see the characters, and the actors playing their daughters are wonderful together. They've got great on-screen chemistry, and I really hope they actually get their own movie going forward. So it is worth a watch. But anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about. I'm sorry.
Really, this isn't House Rules, the Bill and Ted adventure?
Hey, I'm fine with House Ruling Bill and Ted's series if you want. I'm good with that. We'll do that.
They're both
anyway, what we came here to talk about was the Warlock character class from Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition and potential ways to quote-unquote fix it. And I put that in quotes because the reason we got off on this, we came into this topic, is because here recently I've been playing a Warlock. And the thing that I personally hate about it, and this is something that I'd like to discuss, is not really fixing it, but how to play the class better and bring flavor into it. I don't like the Eldritch Blast. Because if you reduce it to just numbers, the best thing the Warlock can do in any kind of a combat situation is just Eldritch Blast. All right, it's your turn. What do you do? Well, I'm gonna roll my Eldritch Blast.
And that's it.
And it scales with you.
Yes.
So it's not like it's a low spell that's useful at the beginning, but then gets less useful as you go up. It's like, even as you level, the best thing you can do is Eldritch Blast.
Correct me if I'm wrong, everybody, but it's a holdover from the 4th edition Warlock, correct, where they were trying to give everybody a at-will ability you could use continuously over and over again.
Correct. I think the main point that, or the one thing that we should start with here is we're saying, you know, fixing it or it's broken. I think the ultimate thing here is like, is it broken? Does it need to be fixed? Or is it just like, because a lot of times the things we say it needs to be fixed or it's broken are things that we find not fun about the class. Maybe it's just not a class we want to play. Yeah. But in the scheme of how the class was actually designed, you're actually playing it the way it's to be designed. Maybe it's just you don't like that particular type of character class.
Ultimately, what is
everybody's thought process, or what is everybody's opinion of what is the Warlock? Is it a spellcasting class? Is it a melee class? What type of class do you see the Warlock as?
Personally, I see it as a spellflinger.
Okay, so I think that's the problem there.
Yeah,
because because ultimately, and I'll throw out some minor things here. So a 10th level warlock, has two spell slots. Two. That's it. You have two. You go up to three when you hit level 11, but you only have two at level. So you have two spell slots. So technically in a combat, most combats average between 4 and 5 rounds. So if you're a spellcaster and you're, let's say you're a 10th level warlock and you're flinging your spells, right? You're going to be flinging spells. So round one, you fling one spell off your spell list. So round two, you fling one spell off your spell list. Guess what you can do for rounds 3, 4, and 5? Eldritch Blast.
Eldritch Blast, exactly.
That's exactly it, because that's... now, I think another holdover, and looping back to what Jeremiah brought up, is old school D&D players have a mentality based upon older editions of D&D. The older editions of D&D, if you're out of magic for the day, or if your classes are out of magic for the day, then you basically need to sleep for the night, right? You need to do what is now termed a long rest. You need to sleep for the night. So a lot of times, old school, and I saw this, you know, I have not played the warlock. I know how the warlock works, but I've observationally watching the warlock being played from the other side of the screen and also the other players, what they would like to do is they just want to go for the day and then at the end of the day rest, right? Whereas the warlocks mechanically is built, you have this encounter. If you do a short rest, even though maybe nobody needs to do a short rest, if the warlock does a short rest immediately after the encounter, then they get their spell slots back. So it's mechanically set up different from like the other traditional classes in terms of recovery. And I think that feeds into it as well, because nobody's going, okay, we just had this encounter, let's do a short rest, because that's not how an old school mentality of playing D&D works. It's not how it flows, right? So that's that. I think that lends to it too, because you know Jamie played the warlock, and a lot of times you know, she would it causes you to be very reserved in trying selective and reserved in deploying your actual spell slots.
Yeah. Right? And that's fine. You know, being as a player, that's fine. So if I've only got two spell slots, you know, so I'm trying to be more conservative with my spells and use them only when I need to. So we don't have to do, you know, and everything, that's cool. You know, and I'm fine with that. But then like I can't find, you know, like I can't equip my character. It doesn't matter what I equip my character with, because the Eldritch Blast is better, you know.
No, yeah.
I mean, so
that's designed to be your primary mode of attack.
Yeah, I know.
And Hex and Eldritch Blast.
Yeah, and it's just I don't like that. When I'm playing my warlock, like, you know, I try to find ways to use my spells creatively outside the box. I try to think outside the box on different things.
Then you pick the wrong class. I'm being serious. If you're rank ordering the arcane classes, and let's throw Bard to the side here. If you're ranking ordering the primary classes, like wizard is going to be your most versatile class. Then it's going to be sorcerer, and then at the bottom of that totem pole is going to be warlock. Because even the sorcerer you have a more limited selection of spells, and you have less versatility. Whereas the wizard can acquire, essentially, the wizard can acquire everything, right? Because they have a spell book that they write spells into. So the wizard has the most versatility in acquiring spells and also utilizing and using those spells during combat. Or outside of combat, right? Whereas the sorcerer is kind of the wizard in terms of maybe the number of spell slots, but their spell selection list is going to be much more narrow, and so it needs to be more focused, right? So what kind of sorcerer are you going to be, right? Are you going to be doing damage? Are you buffing? What kind of sorcerer are you going to do, right?
Well,
because you have a limited selection. The warlock is the bottom of that totem pole in terms of both selection and the number of spell slots you have.
Well, what's a warlock? I mean,
That's a good. That's an excellent question.
What's he supposed to be? I mean, like,
that's a good question.
Well, that comes down to your pact.
You're packed a little bit, but also I think honestly, because if you look, so the two main pieces of a warlock is number one is pact, but also it's Eldritch's invocations that it gets. But if you look at the Eldritch invocations just from the primary book, not any of the expansions, just in the primary book, you have one Eldritch invocation that improves the Pact of Shadows, the one with the book.
Pact of the Tome.
You have two that improve Pact of the Chain and two that improve Pact of the Blade, right? And then a lot of them will affect Scott's favorite spell, the Eldritch Blast, which will make it shoot longer, do more damage, you know, cause add charisma modifier or add extra damage to it, or make it push or pull or whatever. So, and then smattered in there are one-off items, like can cast detect magic at will. So, but they're less offensive. The ones that are kind of offensive remain still consume a spell slot. So you can like conjure an elemental. You can cast conjure elemental by using one of your spell slots. So, but the ones that aren't consuming your spell slots are more utility based. So, like, you know, like detect magic or devil's sight, which lets you see in magical or non-magical darkness or things like that. So they're more utility based. So honestly, to be honest, the warlock falls into a trap in terms of, like, if you're going back to the blade, at least you have both the magical, you know, the limited but active magical aspect, but you also have melee options with your warlock. Pact of the Tome or Pact of the Chain, it doesn't give you that melee utility. I mean, you could go in and do some melee, but you know, if you're, you know, at least with Pact of the Blade, your charisma modifier, which is going to be your primary stat, is going to add into your damage with your weapon, right? But with Pact of the Tome and Pact of the Chain, you don't get that bonus to your, like, so you can go in and run and hit somebody with a sword, but you know it's going to be based on your strength, and strength is probably not going to be your high stat if you're being a warlock.
Well, and like Jamie's playing a Hexblade, and yep. We house ruled the Eldritch Blast because it felt foolish to be a melee character with a Hexblade range attack.
Mm-hmm.
That we house ruled her melee attack and her packed blade into being Hexblade hit and damage. Or, I mean, Eldritch Blast to hit and damage.
Yep.
So she no longer technically has a ranged Eldritch Blast attack. It's now her weapon she's using.
Yep.
Yeah, see, and that's
a house rule. Just make more flavor for the character.
Yeah, and see, that I love. Because in all the stuff, Houston, that you've been talking about and everything, which is wonderful, and I love it, but...
I hear a but there.
There's a there but. Yeah, there's a but. This is something that kind of sticks in my craw a bit. It's because you made the statement, what kind of warlock do you want to play? Do you want to do this? What kind of sorcerer do you want to play? Do you want to be one that does, you know, damage this way or blah, 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 blah? Yeah. I don't like picking what character I'm going to play from that perspective. When I pick a character, it's because I have an idea for a character. You know, I have no idea who that character is or how he's going to play.
What I'm talking about is within the bounds of the actual character rule creation.
You
may have an idea of like say you want to be a sorcerer who's focused on lightning because you want to be like a lightning god, right? You could create a sorcerer that way. But what I'm saying in terms of versatility, I'm talking in terms of like being completely versatile.
Yeah.
Like you're in terms of just because the number of spells that you're going to have access to as a warlock, a sorcerer, or a wizard, there's a large discrepancy in versatility because of limits of selection between the final two.
Yeah. I don't know. Every time people talk about combat roles when it comes to role playing game characters, I cringe a little. You know, I think one of the worst things that happened to the role playing game world, genre, gaming, whatever, was the World of Warcraft terminology. The MMORPG stuff kind of being thrown into it. I'm a tank.
That's how we got fourth edition. The fourth edition is terrible.
Yes, but
you also have to acknowledge that D&D is primarily a combat game.
It is. It is. And but at the same time, I personally don't like thinking about it in those terms. I don't like thinking, you know, I'm going to make a tank, or you know what, I want to do a damage over time kind of person. Area control. That's me. No, I don't like thinking about it.
You might not like thinking about it, but I mean, if you have an idea for a character, which character class you're going to pick, like I like making my characters, like I like having ideas for a character, like you, Scott.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, you're not you chose to play a warlock and you're not having as much fun with a warlock. The reason you're not having as much fun is because in the scope of the rules for the warlock, it's kind of put you into this box.
Yeah. Now, how do I break out of that box?
You to break out of the box, you're going to have to change the warlock.
Can I chime in here?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
As somebody that played a warlock to 11th level, be open-minded about what you want to do with the class. Yes, it's very restrictive. But there are ways to layer in, basically more versatility. So my character came into, you know, the Ravenloft campaign. I knew nothing about Ravenloft. I didn't know what the hell was going to happen. I also struggled with, cause I wanted her to be a great old one pact. I wanted her to be a researcher, as you know, her backstory is she just all of a sudden discovers she has this magic. She has no idea where the hell it comes from. And now she's searching every library she can find to figure out where what she has is coming from. Somehow she's ended up in Ravenloft. She walked through the Death House. You know, we all go from there. But something I talked about with him was, you know, I don't know where this comes from, and we really couldn't come with an idea either. But we just went with it. She doesn't know. This stuff is just happening, and cool, I could do this, and I can do that. But as part of her studies, mind you, she's not a wizard. But she's still reading books. She's still learning things. So at some point, I think at 8th level, I branched out into one level of sorcerer. So now, not only adding two more spell slots to my availability, I have now opened their spell list. She's a hugger. She likes to touch people. Give me burning hands, please.
See, now that's a really good idea. I'll be honest, that is something I've not considered was after creating your character.
There's more.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
There's more.
Sorry.
My bad. So, total 8th level, she went sorcerer. The next level, she stayed warlock. I've only taken one level of sorcerer for this entire character. So, when she was 8th level warlock, now she gets either, I can either boost a stat, or I can take a feat. She took magic initiate. Why? Because partway through the campaign, we had a cleric join the party. I talked to that cleric a lot. You know what? That cleric taught me some stuff. I'm a hugger. I like to touch people. I can now inflict wounds. So it's just, you know, it's what do you want to do with the character? Yeah, she's not. I'll tell you, and Houston will tell you, I didn't use Eldritch Blast that often past 4th level because I didn't need to. I had other stuff coming in that was a little more interesting than just boop, 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 boop. Add my charisma modifier, cool, max damage, get the hell out of my face. I got something else to do.
Well, see, and Scott's character could kind of follow a similar vein because he's a warlock who thinks he's a wizard. And he's got the fae patron who has helped convince him that he's a wizard.
Yeah, he doesn't know where his power comes from. He literally just thinks it's innate talent that he studied and learned how to do magic.
Is his name Harry?
It is not. It is not.
but it wouldn't be beyond reason the character might eventually take another spellcasting class or a feat that gives him more access to spells. Because the evocations he's taken have given him lots of extra spells. Not necessarily spell slots, but a lot of extra cantrips, and he can already do the rituals pretty well too.
Yep.
Yeah, see, I liked with Ravenloft, you know, taking that level of sorcerer, it's Ravenloft. Anything can happen. There's chaos everywhere. So she took that wild magic side of the sorcerer because let's roll a d20. Let's see what the hell happens.
Ah, wild magic. Gotta love it.
And Scott, that is one way within the rules to actually branch out.
Yeah, and like I said, in all honesty, this entire time, because I've always, and I don't know why, but I've always had an aversion to multi-class characters.
Because you come from older editions.
And I like single-class characters. And I mean, yeah, I come from AD&D 2nd Edition in the fact that that's where, you know, I was started. But I'm very, very much entrenched in the 3rd Edition, 3.5 era as well. And the whole fallacy of 3.5, if you make a first level character, it's going to be a first level rogue. Because you should never make a first level anything else in 3rd Edition.
Why would you? You miss out on skill points.
Exactly.
That's right.
And then you multi-class after that. But I've just always, I've had an aversion to it. But yeah, I didn't think about taking a second class to augment what my character concept would be.
Yep.
You know, that's a really good idea. I like that. But I also love, you know, what Jeremiah, you had done with Jamie E, for incorporating the Eldritch Blast into,
her packed weapon.
Her packed weapon and stuff. So, once again, I use the term fixed loosely. I just for people like me, or now if you love playing that type of character, you just want an Eldritch Blast, cool, go for it, do it. But, you know, I like a little bit more flavor and trying to more character development and other things to fall back on. So yeah, right now I'm loving the multi-class idea. Jeremiah, you should have told me about that. I didn't even know. I
mean, yeah. It's only been in the rules for 30-some years.
So. I swear, I'm just now hearing about this. It just got added like that. You know,
it was developed by this new company that just launched.
Yeah, I was going to say, did Chaosium come in and revamp D&D?
Yeah, exactly, that's it, yes.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. See, now I'm looking up, once I figure out where I'm at here, on... stuff. I was going to look up like sorcerer and stuff, because I'm curious to see what's out there that I could use to make my warlock a little bit less, you know, Haruken.
Boxed in, hinged.
Yes,
or,
I want my warlock to be less warlocky. I want to play a non warlock that's a warlock.
Well, yeah, but if you go that sorcerer route, then you're still not necessarily a wizard, but he doesn't realize he's not a wizard still.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's true. Because you're not using the whole traditional spellbook research.
The best part of Scott's character is he thinks he is. He has a spellbook that he writes in that keeps stuff in. Yeah. He thinks he's a wizard.
Yeah, he has the spellbook. Every chance he gets, he's in there doing research all the time. Like, he does all the work for a wizard, but he gets none of the benefits at all.
So you're a Pact of the Great Old One?
No, I'm what am I? The Fae.
The Archfey,
the Archfey, and my
which sounds like a you know a beautiful Fey trick.
Well, yeah. So basically, the background of the character is he wanted to be a wizard, and he kept asking the wizards of his clan to train him, and they tested him, of course, and he has no magical aptitude at all, and they're like, "Go forge something, dude. That's what you need to do," because he actually comes from a family of brewers. They're like, go make ale. That's what you're good at. And he's like, no. And so he started studying and he was trying to cast a spell. And one day in the library, he got just close enough to correctly pronouncing the name of an archfey that it caught his attention. And the archfey popped in, invisible, and started observing my character. And he's like, the hell is he doing? And he's like, is he trying to be a wizard? You know, and so he figured out what was going on, and he's like, "Oh, this is going to be fun." and so he gave him power, you know, and he just went with it. And he started casting spells, and I took Pact of the Tome, which gives me that pseudo spellbook kind of thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Book of Shadows.
Yeah, and so I've got my little spellbook, and like, but if any actual wizard looks at my spellbook, it's all gibberish because it makes no damn sense.
Because it's in Dwarven?
No, not because it's a dwarven, because everything's wrong. You know, even if they can read dwarven, it's still gibberish.
But by God, he thinks he's a wizard.
Yep.
He's the greatest. Yes, and you're just counting my spells. With just that little bit of work I've done with her, I have 13 cantrips.
Wow.
That's insane. she's a warlock that can cast Sacred Flame. What?
Funny. I like it. So I'm looking at the, a sorcerer at first level gets two spell slots.
Yes. You doubled your spell slots.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just by taking the one. But it's two first level spell slots.
Still.
That's it. Wow, yeah, that's funny.
Never, so you know what you're doing level then, right?
Probably. I mean, I'm gonna look and see, you know, between now and then, and see if there's anything else that I would rather do that might fit the character better. But yeah, that's what I'm enjoying quite a bit right now. So kudos.
So glad we could help you, Scott.
Yes. Go like Houston said, the warlock class is not my cup of tea. If I like a spellcaster, I'd go full blown wizard.
Yep.
So,
yep.
How are you supposed to know what you're going to need to cast? And you never have it prepared.
Yes, you do. I got lots of experience as a wizard too. So
no,
yes.
No, it's never. Oh, I didn't prepare that one today. I prepared it for the last 2 weeks and didn't need it. So mm-hmm. I didn't do it today, but today I need it.
Hey, but in the new rules, you can actually take a short rest and recover a spell slot.
Yes, you can.
And you can memorize that spell you need.
I don't have full thing of a 5th edition. Do they still have the thing where you can drop a higher spell slot to, like, cast whatever you want of a lower spell slot or something?
Yeah, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
See, that's Jamie, that's part of what I struggle with the cleric, is I need to have my stuff ready. And you say, hey, do you have create food and drink ready? No. My character doesn't need to eat or drink.
What about me?
I'm fine. What's your problem?
No problem, Mon.
She's a heavy metal world child. She don't need food.
Oh. Yeah.
Well, but, you know, I will say I like that my warlock, I like what we've done with the Hexblade.
Mm-hmm.
Or like a hex blade. That's what it is.
It's a hex blade.
Whatever. But at the same time, you know, I basically feel like a fighter.
More than a
warlock. Because even when I look at, because the last few times that we've played, I probably really needed to do some of my other spells, but I couldn't afford to.
You're a warcaster, but you're still in the middle of a fight.
Right, so, yeah. And I'm up close and personal because I'm not standing back doing it. So it's really hard for me to stop and cast a different spell. You know, I feel even more, you know, but I mean, I feel more like a fighter. Once I'm in the fight, that's about all I can do is the Eldritch Blast until I can gain some distance to try to do something else.
Of course, it also doesn't help that, you know, in the game that we're playing, the entire party is warlocks.
No, that's what I was going to say. It's gonna depend on your party dynamic.
Yep.
Well, we got two warlocks, and one warlock doesn't know he's a warlock.
And some NPCs who come and go, but none of them are full-time.
And I'm not even sure the warlock knows that the other player is a warlock, because she fights with the blade. So, I mean, there's a lot of confusion.
Yeah, I've never seen her cast a spell. She just whips that blade around a lot. She's got a hell of a magical weapon.
It's the normal.
You know, the more I kind of think about it, I think, to be honest, what they tried to do with the warlock, the concept or the premise behind the warlock, not going again into any of the expanded classes from or subclasses. In the primary scheme of the warlock, I think they tried to create a class that allowed you to versatilely pick what you wanted to play, whether it's a caster. Because if you choose Pact of the Blade, regardless of whether you go Old One, Fae, or Fiend, if you go Pact of the Blade, primarily you're pushing your Warlock into a more melee role, whereas if you go like Pact of the Tome or maybe Pact of the Chain, you can push your Warlock more into a caster role, especially if you go Pact of the Tome. It at least opens up a more more opportunity for you to cast different types of spells. Now they may be cantrips, but it does give you that opportunity. Plus, you could, in theory, augment your casting, at least in the lower level realm, with some of those Eldritch invocations, because you could have like cast jump at will whenever you want, cast detect magic at will whenever you want, cast false life at will whenever you want, cast alter self at will whenever you want, right? So you could at least augment yourself that way, to be more caster-y in terms of, not exactly a word, but more caster-y in that type of realm. So I think that's what they were trying to do with the Warlock. Like, they gave you the flexibility to pick an idea and go with it. And also, a lot of the invocations can has a lot of utility outside of the combat realm. So you can maybe create a character more socially interactive or exploration interactive. So I think that's what they were trying to go with when they were creating the Warlock. Something that had a lot of flexibility within a specific scope.
Be a hybrid class where you can do a little bit of everything, but not an expert really at any of it.
Right. Yeah. But you also had the opportunity to say, okay, my Warlock is going to be like a melee Warlock, like Jamie. So if you want to do that, you're not going to go Pact of the Tome or Pact of the Chain. You're going to pick Pact of the Blade. You know, if I want to be somebody who can cast more or do some unusual things, then maybe I'm going to go Pact of the Tome. And then for one of my invocations, I'm going to take the Book of Shadows.
I got it.
Interesting.
And plus, we've inspired Scott to change his character concept a little bit.
Well, there we go.
I mean, the character concept is still in play. I'm just trying to figure out how to. I'm trying to figure out, because ultimately, it's actually kind of defeating. Because I want to play a Warlock, but I don't want to play him like a Warlock, which is part of my problem. Houston, tell me how to make a Warlock more like an awesome spellcaster that I should have just played an awesome spellcaster.
take more classes or take more levels in the awesome character class you want to play.
Yep.
Well, that's just poo-doo, all right?
Well, I mean, because, I mean, the only way to do it, Scott, with while staying within the bounds of the Warlock is actually changing the mechanics of the Warlock.
Yeah, I thought that's what we were doing. Isn't that what we're doing? We're changing it.
Sure. I mean, we can.
Let's just change it.
Okay.
No, we don't have to. Once again, I just thought we'd have a nice in-depth discussion on a single class for D&D 5th edition. Because
I had fun with the class.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm having fun with the class. You know, it's going well. I love everything about it.
You just don't want an Eldritch Blast.
I just don't want an Eldritch Blast every time. That's my big thing. Yeah, well, I know, but I also need an option that's equally as viable. Because at the same time, it's my best option, and that I don't like.
That's the whole optimal versus suboptimal argument there, right? Because optimally, The best thing for the Warlock to do is Eldritch Blast, because it's set up to be a core component of the class.
Yeah, especially at lower levels.
Especially at lower levels.
Don't be afraid to lean on it at lower levels.
Yeah. No, I mean, I get that. I don't even know what level we are. What level are we?
The fourth level.
Okay. I mean, I try to think outside the box as much as I can, but eventually, it comes down to I just have to Eldritch Blast. Because it's the best option. Usually it happens once I'm down about 50% of my hit points. And I'm like, well, shit, the last 14 things I tried didn't work. Screw it, Eldritch Blast.
What did you do at fourth level?
Well, one of the things that I did, we got into a fight with a witch.
No, I mean, did you boost your stats or did you take a feat?
Oh, I have no idea. I've slept since then.
Oh.
I don't remember.
I think you boosted stats.
Most likely at fourth level, you would boost your stats because that's...
You gotta get sexy.
Yeah, exactly.
Get sexy. You can do more stuff.
Gotta get sexy.
Well, you know, that's all well and good until you and another and a dwarf are fighting over a rod of charisma. You know. And you almost fall in love with each other because your charismas are so damn high by the end of that fight.
Yes, that was entertaining.
I don't know. I'm weird when it comes to character classes, and I'm stubborn, and I don't think on. I have a very hard time thinking in terms of the mechanics and the system of the game, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Basically, you have an idea what you want your character to be, and that's in your head. And I think in this instance, the mechanics and systems is limiting that vision.
Yeah, somewhat. Yeah.
To answer your question, Jamie, he took Fae Touched Feet at fourth level.
Oh.
I did?
Yep. So you raised your charisma by one, and you learned Misty Step and Detect Magic.
There you go.
That sounds awesome. Was that a good idea?
Yeah.
It seems like it. What did I do? Did I do the same thing? Because I maybe should have.
Yeah, that's what I have Eldritch Sight for. I can cast Detect Magic at will. It did frequently in Ravenloft because everything glows in Ravenloft.
It all glows.
That's just funny.
Yes.
So, while we're on the subject, you know, we're doing the Warlock and stuff today. I know we focused a lot on my hang-ups with the character and everything. But one thing I think would be fun to touch on for our listeners is prior to us recording this episode, there was a broken warlock sorcerer combo that was brought up, right? Unless I imagined it.
We don't know what you're talking about at all.
I don't.
How weird does that sound?
I don't know. It was something. It was the Juan Valdez. Warlock.
Yeah, the coffee lock build.
Yeah. Juan Valdez. You know, you got the burrow and everything with you and stuff. I think it would be good to discuss that for a minute. Like, other than just outright denying that ability, like, what could game masters do to if somebody made that build to kind of run that character a little better and not have it be as broken?
Well, there's a couple different class and ability and feat combinations with various classes that make them what everybody considers a little overpowered. But the gist of the coffee lock is the sorcerer warlock combination where you can use your sorcerer points to basically refresh your spell slots for warlock just by taking a short break, and you never have to take a long rest.
Yep.
And have infinite spell slots, basically.
But, and let me ask you this. Why is so? Like, let's say we're playing D&D, right? Mm-hmm. And we're going along, we're going in a dungeon, or we're doing whatever, and we decide to take a short rest. So yes. We're like, everybody good with a short rest? Yeah, we're good with a short rest. We can do that right now. Is the area secure? Yeah, area secure. Okay, so we take a short rest. Boom, you've taken a short rest. Refresh everything that you're supposed to. Blah blah blah. And then you get to, hey, I'm out of spell slots. Yeah, so am I. I need to do this. We need to take a long rest. Okay, you want to take a long rest? Yeah, we're going to take a long rest. Is the area secure? Yeah, area secure. Okay, you take a long rest, secure whatever you need to. It's the exact same thing. Like, what am I missing?
But not the duration.
But the duration is somewhat irrelevant because it's dead game time.
Yeah, but at the same time, the short rest only recovers limited spell slots and limited hit points. The long rest lets you recover more and reset some of what you spent on short rest.
Yeah,
recovering short.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, in real world, they're the same. I see the same thing. I see the same thing happening regardless. So why wouldn't you just always take a long rest?
Because
you can only take a long rest once a day.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mechanically.
Okay, so we take a long rest, we sleep, it's the next day. We continue. It's just like sleeping in AD&D Second Edition.
Yeah, but, well, no. So the point, the concept you're missing there is, okay, let's say we got out of a fight, and Jeremiah's a wizard, Scott, you're a warlock, and I'm a cleric, all right? And all three of us have cast magic during that battle. And maybe we still have a little bit of wounds or whatever in the party. We all decide to take a short rest. We take a short rest. Like, you're completely on magic. Okay, let's do this. Jeremiah's completely on magic, and you're completely on magic, and I'm completely on magic. And we still have some wounds. We decide we're still going to press on. We're only going to take a short rest, a one-hour rest. We do that. That lets everybody use the opportunity to spend hit dice to recover their hit points up to their hit dice maximum, whatever. But, you know, so they do that. After we break camp, Jeremiah's out of magic, I'm out of magic, all your spell slots are full.
Yeah, but why wouldn't you just take a long rest there?
Go ahead.
No, I'm just, we could, but if that's 8 hours in the day and the day's still going on, we can't take another long rest.
Well, and that doesn't take into account what may or may not be happening during the adventure while you're
during the 8 hours, yeah.
So it basically comes down to contextual restrictions within what's going on in the adventure.
And back in old second edition, you go get into a big battle, everybody blows all their spells, and then everybody they sleep for 8 hours and rest, and you get up and have your next battle, and then everybody rests for 8 hours, and you have your next battle, and everybody rests for 8 hours, and the adventure takes 6 weeks of game time.
I'm fine with 6 weeks. of in game.
That's
time.
Also the dungeons where the monsters in the rooms next to each other never talk or encounter each other either.
Exactly. They you barricade the door and they never come check out what's going on.
Yep.
Yeah, I do remember that
question. It's the real life. It's one of the rules that once again came over from 4th edition that I kind of like the concept behind. Where you can, everybody takes a real quick breather, catch their breath, tend their wounds, look at their spell book real quick, and then keep going. Or we bed down for the night and set up a guard rotation.
Yep.
And also run the risk of
getting interrupted
and not being able to fulfill your rest. I mean, you know, depends on where you are, right? When you're in the Temple of Elemental Evil,
yeah,
you know, you got to plan this crap and well.
Well, there's your first problem.
Do what?
There's your first problem. I mean, you know, it's called the Temple of Elemental Evil. It just seems like a place you don't want to walk into.
what are you talking about? I bought the t-shirt while I was there.
Gift shop on 3rd level.
Exactly.
And I was there for quite a while.
Awesome. I think I'm going to somehow incorporate that. There's going to be a gift shop.
All dungeons have a hidden gift shop. If you can find Houston's gift shop.
But getting back on that, there's different ways to min-max and abuse some of the rules on builds.
Yeah.
My favorite is the diviner build where you can be second level and have plus 11 initiative. Or even first level, the human variant.
Good God.
Yep. The I go first build.
Yep.
I go first.
Yep.
Okay, what's your action? I'm going to hold and see what everybody else does. Really?
Or there's a druid barbarian build, which is scary for low level.
Well, going forward, I've kind of been enjoying this discussion, and I think we should do, you know, further deep dives into individual character classes.
It'll be fun.
You know, just talk about them, the different builds, what you can do, what you can't, advice for game masters, you know, on how to handle
wizard
certain
build selection for how to plan for your day and what wizard duels are and how to plan for one. Yeah,
that would be good.
How to run a defiler, even though you're a defiler class.
Does it matter?
Carry bags of salt.
Yep, bags of salt. Salt the earth around you as you cast spells.
If you what don't do know what's going on, the first thing you do is disbelieve. Just start with disbelieving.
It's not real. It's not real. It's not real.
It's not real because that might solve your problem.
What to do when your DM changes your race entirely?
Yep, yep. Turned you into a Gundam.
Yep, turned me into a Gundam.
When they give you evil orbs that turn you evil.
Yep, that happens too.
Is that what happened to our warlock?
No, your warlock just started evil.
No, she didn't.
No. She's kind of like Scott. You know where Scott thinks he's a wizard, but he's not a wizard? Your character thinks she's chaotic neutral, and she's not.
She performed no evil actions during that entire campaign.
Casting Hunger of Adar on people in a jail, trapped in a jail, is an evil act.
It was an interrogation, and they did not die.
They didn't die because you ended after one round and you rolled poorly for your damage.
They didn't die.
They almost did.
Sometimes when it comes to people in jail, you just got to do what you got to do. I mean, just because you kill all the guards and leave all the dead bodies in with it.
My favorite part is the fact that the paladin helped you with that.
He did. He let it happen.
Hey,
he distracted the jailer so you could do that.
Don't knock it. At one point, we had a cleric and a dwarf who had an interrogation technique. Once the dwarf figured out that the cleric could cast Speak with the Dead, he would go out and start lopping off heads.
And bring them back to quit the quizzle.
And bring them back to interrogate them. Because it was easier than bringing back the whole body.
That's fair.
Yep.
That's pathetic,
and Scott, if you want to explore that option, one of the Eldritch invocations is cast Speak with Dead at will. So it you is. Can take take that, and you can become a master interrogator.
Yep. Well, because the dead don't really care as much.
Yeah. The the warlock character would have far less problems with it than the cleric did. The cleric who was he neutral good or was he
neutral good?
Yeah. Yeah, he had some issues with the whole, because literally the dwarf came back and just emptied a bag of heads on the floor of our room at the end. And he's like, all right, get to talking. Like, what? Yeah. God, that was awful. So, alrighty. Anything else on quote-unquote fixing the warlock? I know we're not fixing the warlock, but just, you know, ideas on people who they want to play a warlock, they've got a great character idea, but they kind of feel pigeonholed, you know, a little bit with the whole dependency on Eldritch Blast being its primary mode of damage conveyance.
Like any RPG, don't be afraid to work with your game master or a dungeon master, whatever, to house rule a character or a feat or ability to make it more fun to play. As long as everybody's on board and doesn't harm the way you're playing the game or how everybody plays it, why not?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with reskinning or moving over. Like, if you don't want Eldritch Blast, maybe Firebolt. I mean,
yep.
There's nothing wrong with, because at the end of the day, if I roll a d20, add my modifier, and then roll my damage and add my modifier to it, it doesn't really matter whether I called it Eldritch Blast or I called it Firebolt or I called it Chill, you know, Ray of Frost. It doesn't matter.
For stream.
Yes.
All of those.
Yes.
Actually. Now that I think about it, I'm sorry. One thing that would be kind of fun for my character. Yes, I'm going back to my character.
this is the podcast all about Scott and his character.
Leave me alone. since my patron is a fae who's literally just screwing with me, you know what would be really fun is if my Eldritch Blast did something random every time. Like, I didn't know.
Huh? Like a
sorcerer? The wand of wonder thing.
Not like a wand of wonder. Not quite that chaotic, you know. But like, I don't know.
I'll tell you, like, thunderstorms in the Undermountain. But go ahead.
What was it? It was Terry that made the tulips grow in the Underdark with us that one time, right? He used the wand of wonder.
Yes.
Literally, just a field of tulips just sprung up around us. That was just really weird.
It was beautiful if you weren't being murderized at the time.
Yeah, it was pretty, except for the gore and the attacking and the slicing and the gutting and the
dying, screaming,
screaming, gnashing of teeth.
But yeah, that would be kind of cool, as if we had like a random table that my Eldritch Blast. It would still do damage, obviously, because you don't want to just fully take away the damage.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is institute a fumble option where you can hit yourself.
Oh, yes. I'm good with it. I am. If there's a table of effects and one of them is I hit myself because I quote unquote missed cast something, yeah, I'm completely on board with that.
I do not feel good about this. You're going to hit me and not you.
Sounds like wild magic to me.
I don't think this is a good idea.
Are you officially saying nay nay?
Nay nay.
Now, if you want the damage to be, I think it would be fun for the damage to have a random factor. Normal damage, less damage, or holy cow.
Opponent. Or heal the opponent. That would be fun, wouldn't it? Wounds close. Wait, that's not what's supposed to happen. Did I do that wrong? And he starts thumbing through his rule, his tone.
Reverse vampiric Eldritch Blast.
Oh my gosh.
That would be awesome.
Oh. God, yes. I agree. All right. So yeah, we're at the end of our time. Any more parting thoughts on the warlock class and what people could do with it?
Think long and hard before you play one.
That's actually not a bad suggestion. Make sure you understand what your mechanically that the warlock is going to fit the vision that you want to have for your character class.
Right.
Well, my vision was a warlock that didn't know he was a warlock, so I didn't have a choice.
Well, I think your character class fit the vision then.
But he's still a warlock. It's annoying. All right.
He doesn't know that.
Oh. Anyway, so that's all the time we have today. Thank you for joining us. If you'd like, please drop us a line at houserulinggames@gmail.com. You have been listening to House Rules, a proud member of the Talk Nerdy to Me podcast network. Be sure to like us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at House Rules Podcast and TN2MPodNet. And check out our other great podcasts. Until next time, remember, it's your house. It's your rules.
Game over, man.